Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
So Carl Magnus Palm, welcome again, this time to an update interview. A little bit, in a sense, I would say a little bit superficial, not as deep as the other interview, which we really went into the career and lives of ABBA, because you are, of course, a historian, an author, and an ABBA specialist. And last time we went over the whole of the 50 years history because of your book, ABBA at 50. Now, there's always time to write another ABBA book, it seems. And concurrently and after that, you've been working on ABBA on Record. Can you tell me about the genesis of this book and what's this really focusing on?
Well, ABBA on Record, I've written many books about ABBA. I've written biographies and I've written special interest titles that focus on a certain aspect, and this falls into the latter category, I would say. It's like a companion volume to another book that I wrote, which is called ABBA: The Complete Recording Sessions, and that book was based on my research into the archives, and I've listened to tapes of unreleased music and alternate mixes, etc., 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 and piece together the story of how and when ABBA's music was made. So this companion volume is, you know, the Complete Recording Sessions was about, okay, this is what happened when ABBA were in the studio, their creative work, and this is about what happened to the music after it had left the studio. So it's about the album sleeves and how the record companies promoted the records, how ABBA themselves promoted the records, there are some of their promotion tours and stuff like that, and also how they were reviewed at the time, which is kind of eye opening actually, to sort of get extracts from that and see, you know, what the attitude really was like at the time.
What was the attitude?
Well, it was, I mean, when I first started out writing about ABBA, which was about 30 years ago in the early 90s, my impression was, oh, you know, they only got bad reviews. Everyone hated them. That was how I came into it. Everyone hated them. When everyone, I mean, reviewers and music journalists. But it turned out that it wasn't quite as clear-cut as that. It was, they got really, really great reviews from especially in the United States, which is kind of interesting because that was always the problem for ABBA, the problematic country for ABBA, because they never became as big there as they were everywhere else. But in the United States, they perceived ABBA as like a breath of fresh air. It was the antithesis to, say, rock gods like Led Zeppelin, or, you know, they felt, wow, this group, they're going back to the to the early 60s, to Phil Spector productions, you know, the Crystals, the Ronettes, the Do Run Run, that kind of thing. And it's this is what rock and pop music is supposed to be about. And concurrently with those reviews, here in Sweden, there was like, oh, you know, ABBA, they're doing this commercial pop music and it's superficial and they don't sing about anything important. And so it was a really, really interesting contrast. Just the other day, I was looking at reviews for The Winner Takes It All, the single. And now we're obviously, now we're sort of later in the ABBA era. And some of the reviewers at the time, they wrote, well, you know, this is more of the same. It's the usual you get from ABBA. You know, they'll keep their old fans, but they're not going to gain any new ones from this song. Which is, I'm not saying, you know, how stupid they were, because, you know, it was new. No one had heard it then. Today, this is like, oh, this is their best song ever, and everyone regards it as a classic. And whether you're an ABBA fan or not, you sort of acknowledge that this is the best thing they ever did, you know, or top three or top five at least. So it tells you something about the times. It tells you something. It tells you something about the attitudes, and also how hard it is to review something that you've only heard like two or three times, and be fair about it, and you know, and also those reviews, they didn't exist in a vacuum, you know. If what else was coming out at the same time in 1980, who else were releasing records, and how did it compare to that? So, well, that kind of thing I found completely fascinating.
I mean, you know, what also is really fascinating is that, you know, on your website, or you've got some sort of details written down of some stories that are in the book. And one relates to this, where you've going into detailed insights on ABBA's promotional trip to United States in 76, which is obviously earlier than The Winner Takes It All, and the problems they faced. So what problems did they face in the States when you say that actually they were seen as a breath of fresh air? They obviously didn't go really according to plan from what you've written.
No, I think, you know, the reviewers, it was if I'm, you know, to put it more simply in general terms, it was the opposite of what it was like in Sweden, where the public couldn't get enough of them and the reviewers, some of them or many of them, were kind of skeptical. In the United States, it was the other way around. You know, the reviewers loved them, most of them anyway, and certainly, you know, in this early mid period ABBA, or the ABBA story. But the public never really, you know, they didn't get that kind of universal love. I think the problem was they could have been bigger if they'd spent more time there. That's the simple answer.
Wasn't radio really sort of like, at that point, very separated into genres in America in any case? So when you came across, if you didn't fit into a certain radio format, you wouldn't get on air, you wouldn't be pushed. And so in Europe, radio has been sort of, I would say, much more open and played different genres in the same program. And
yeah.
So you would get coverage, whatever show that you went on. But in America, you wouldn't.
No, that's true. It was moving into that. And you had top 40 radio and things like that. And, you know, do we want to go with this single or not? And it's also, I think there were all sorts of problems. I talked to people who promoted ABBA's records in the United States, and they said, well, you know, we had this problem because they released so many singles, and it seemed we were always like one single behind, and all these, you know, in the know DJs. Well, okay, so you want us to play Fernando, but I understand there's a new single out in the UK, which has already been number one, and it's called Dancing Queen. Shouldn't we be playing that? Why do you want us to play this old song? So they had that problem, and they had, and also, I think ABBA themselves were kind of, they remained kind of anonymous in the US. There was nothing personal for the US public to relate to. And if you don't have that, then that's a problem. It's It's, and that's also because I think of the language barriers and things like that, but more also because ABBA were what they were, and they weren't really, hey, look at us, you know, we're the big stars, you know. They were kind of, oh yeah, yeah, we're working on this, and we're doing this, and we're recording our music, and you know, we live our suburban lives.
There's another thing that you've written, which I also found fascinating, is the story behind the ban on mining of records in the UK on Top of the Pops, which meant that ABBA stayed away from the UK for 2.5 years, or the television appearances in the UK for 2.5 years. Could they not sing their songs and play them live? Was it an impossibility, or did they just not want to give another version of what they had produced?
Well, their attitude, and the attitude of many people who were going on Top of the Pops, was that, you know, we worked for hours and weeks and months to make this perfect production of this song, and now you want us to do like to perform it in an inferior way. You know, that's not right. But the main thing really was that the Top of the Pops producers, the BBC, didn't want anyone to perform live on those shows because it was too difficult to you know, it's Top of the Pops was like, okay, now it's this song and now it's that song and we're on this stage and that stage and, you know, and to sort of have control over all, you know, the different levels, volume and blah, 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 and sounds.
So I'm getting this wrong, Emma. They stayed away because they had to mime.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Yeah, no, I've got it the other way around.
No, sorry. It's a combination of both.
Right.
What they objected to was that they had to, in 3 hours, record a completely new version of the song in a studio and then mime to that. So if you listen to old appearances of ABBA on Top of the Pops, if you watch those, you hear, okay, this is not Fernando as we know it. It's a new version that they put together. This is not Waterloo, for instance, you can hear. So, and they felt like, you know, it's not right. We shouldn't have to do that. But the thing was that because there were so many complaints, because if Queen wanted to go on Top of the Pops with Bohemian Rhapsody, there was no way they were going to do a re-recording of that in 3 hours. So what they did allow was, if you had a promo clip, then that could be, you could have that on the show instead. It's not what the Top of the Pops producers wanted, but they had, you know, that was a compromise. And if you paid the appropriate fees to the musicians union, then a promo clip would be all right. So ABBA had promo clips, you know, so they showed the promo clip for Dancing Queen instead, or if they used a television performance from some other country, and you know, the name of the game, the promo clip was shown instead of ABBA going on. So after Fernando, they were never on Top of the Pops again performing, because they just felt, okay, we don't need to do this anymore. We're huge. We can sort of decide if we want to do this or not, because we know that if we have a new single out, then Top of the Pops are going to want to show it, whether it's a promo clip or us appearing in person.
So that really played to their advantage, probably, because obviously their promo clips were, you know, they were really of an order that worked for the band.
Yeah, for sure. But it wasn't, you know, if you look at Top of the Pops, the whole point of Top of the Pops is that the artists are there and you have all this crowd and the cameras going around in the crowd, and that kind of feeling. So to show a clip wasn't, you know, a perfect solution, but it was, they weren't alone in doing that. So, that's the reason why they didn't do it. And then, A lot of artists that were on Top of the Pops, they did a bit of fibbing with this re-recording, because they went to a recording studio and pretended to record a new version. And then when the musicians union representative came, or the BBC producer would say, oh, here's the tape. And it was actually the original recorded version, the perfect version. And most of the time, they seemed the actor did that. They did get away with it. And ABBA, they did that when they the next time they performed on British television again was in 1978, when they were on the Mike Yarwood show, and they performed If It Wasn't for the Nights, which was a track from their forthcoming album Voulez-Vous, and Thank You for the Music. And they, that time, they did exactly that. They pretended to record a new version, but submitted the thing they had recorded in Stockholm, and they got away with it.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join MyLowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
You're listening to Pop, the History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Another thing that you mentioned is about the album designer, Rune Söderqvist, and the sense of aesthetics that he brought to ABBA. So what were they?
Well, he came from the advertising world. So simply put, In the time when albums weren't sold in large quantities, which is like the 60s mainly, and maybe the very early 1970s, when you wanted an album sleeve in this country, in Sweden, and also in the UK, what did you do? Well, you went out somewhere in a forest or some park or some nice area. You took a picture of the artist or the group or whatever, and then you gave it to someone, the designer, who put together a sleeve, and that was it. But what then you had with from the Sgt. Pepper, the Beatles Sgt. Pepper album, that's obviously kind of a milestone in album design, and then that became more and more apparent. You had this this company in the UK, Hypnosis, who did the Pink Floyd sleeves and 10cc and Wings and whoever else. And then it became more conceptual. It wasn't, if you wanted to be taken seriously, your album sleeve had to look like there was some thought put in it or behind it. I'm losing my British grammar. I'm sorry. Anyway, so what... what Rune, he brought that kind of thinking that, an album sleeve should look proper, but he also, because he came from the advertising world, he brought in that kind of thinking. It's like, what is this album saying? What do we want to say? How do we want to present them? Can we present them in a way that's interesting, that makes you think? So for instance, the first sleeve he did was the Arrival album. And okay, so how do you present four people in a way that's natural or interesting? Okay, let's shove them into a helicopter. That will be a great image, And so when you look at the sleeve, okay, why are they sitting in a helicopter? Okay, so the album is called Arrival. Okay, they're arriving, and then when you turn it over, you see the helicopter flying away. Where are they flying to? Why are they there? It intrigues you a bit more than someone standing beside a tree smiling.
It represents many other things, doesn't it? It also sort of represents success, movement. I presume that all those things are wrapped up in the thinking behind such an image.
Exactly. And obviously also the most important thing he brought to ABBA's, you know, design universe, if we call it that, is that he invented the ABBA logo with a backwards B that became so iconic, and which is, you know, really, you know, timeless and still works today. So he felt, you know, you need to present this group in a unified way. You can't have this free-for-all thing that you have. Because if you look at ABBA's singles and ABBA's album sleeves before he came along, in the various countries where they were released, they look, you know, sometimes they look really terrible. And it's like anyone can do anything they want with an ABBA sleeve, and that went against everything that he thought was important in terms of design and visual presentation.
He obviously came along later than the actual name ABBA was invented, and you talk about that as well, and you describe it as an ultra-detailed essay on how the group name Björn and Benny Agnieszka and Frida was changed to ABBA. So What exactly happened?
Well, what happened was that you had to go back to the very early ABBA days to sort of understand this process, because when they started recording together, there was a duo called Björn and Benny, which was Björn Ulvaeus and Benny Andersson. Okay. And they had a dream of reaching outside Swedish borders with English language pop music. So they tried, well, let's try to record this song in English together with Agneta and Frida. And just as an experiment, because they were all busy with other things. This wasn't like their main career or anything like that from that day. It was like, just let's try it and see what happens. Okay, so what are we going to call ourselves? Well, we can't call ourselves Björn and Benny because the girls are singing on it. They have lead vocals. So, okay, it's Björn and Benny, Agneta and Annifrid. Okay. And then that, when People Need Love, which was that song that they recorded, became a success, they started recording more and they made an album and blah, blah, blah. And obviously everyone realized, well, if we want an international career, we can't very well call ourselves Björn and Benny, Agneta and Annifrid. You know, most people outside Sweden can't even pronounce Agneta, which is Agneta is the exactly. It's the correct name. I don't think I've heard anyone from an English speaking country ever pronounce that name correctly. However hard they try, it's a sound there that you don't have. We have it anyway, and it's, you know, it's okay. Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, fine. Those are English syllable, you know, short syllable names. Whereas these Swedish names, it's going to be too difficult. We have to find something else. So it started with Stig Andersson just for fun. He moved around the first letter of each of their first names. So you have A for Agneta, B for Björn, B for Benny, and A for Annifrid, and just say, he said ABBA just for fun. We have a canned fish factory here in Sweden that's also called ABBA. So it was like, ha 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 ha. I'm referring to them as ABBA when he wrote like memos in the office and when he talked to the media about them, just because he got fed up with having to rattle off their own names. Well, you know, ABBA. Blah, blah, blah. And then that was picked up by the media. They started writing, using that ha 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 as a joke, but sometimes not as a joke, they just wrote it. And now we're like in early 1973, even before Ring Ring, and Waterloo didn't happen until a year later. So it's very still, it's kind of early when this starts appearing. And then there was like a discussion back and forth, because the group didn't feel very enthusiastic about this name. It's like, people going to think about canned fish when they hear our music? And Stig argued, well, that's only in Scandinavia. You know, there's no one who knows anything about ABBA, the canned fish factory, in the rest of the world. So And he argued, you know, it's a good name. You can say it in any language. You can say it, you know, in Sweden we say ABBA. In the UK you say ABBA. In the United States they say ABBA. And I'm sure there are a million other ways to pronounce it. But, you know, it's a short, simple name. You can say it whichever way you want. I even heard someone actually told me they were on holiday in some country quite far away from Sweden. I don't recall exactly. And they were playing some music by ABBA. And they were Swedes. And they came up to this band who were playing this music. And said, oh, you're playing ABBA songs. And I was like, what? Were you playing ABBA songs? Oh, you mean ABBA. So there's all sorts of variations on that. But then eventually it kind of, there was a competition and there were all sorts of things. But in the end, they sort of said, okay, let's go with ABBA. They sort of admitted defeat. But I don't think they were ever quite happy with that name. And it's much more, I could tell you more details, but then I would have to read from my book. And
well, I think everyone else should read from your book when it's out. Yeah, yeah. It is on pre-order, I understand. So if people want to pre-order, they can go to your website. Just finally, because as I said, this is a short interview, Stig Anderson was one of the most integral people in the success of ABBA. And we're in Eurovision season. And everyone, of course, will forever associate Eurovision with ABBA. What did you find out was the most important thing that Stig did to make ABBA successful at Eurovision?
Well, I would say the most important thing he did was that he laid the groundwork long before they were actually seen on television at Eurovision in April 1974. He had made sure that the record was released in as many countries as possible. He had gone on trips and told them, you know, we're going to be there. You're going to see us. You have this record that's bound to be a hit, you know, make the most of it. So he had sort of, it was like, the analogy they like to use themselves, the ABBA organization, is it was like pushing a button and everything just happened for them, and it made it so much bigger than it would have been otherwise. So that's the thing, because otherwise Eurovision winners might sort of, oh, we won, what do we do now? And then, you know, momentum is lost, and 2 weeks later or a month later at least, no one's interested anymore. Whereas in ABBA's case, everything was prepared and they could sort of build on that first success from that they achieved with Waterloo. So that was his biggest achievement in terms of the Eurovision Song Contest.
It does seem that the ABBA story just will go on and on forever. And as I said, this book will be out later on this year. It's already available for pre-order on your website. It's always fascinating to talk to you because for me, I find out so much more about a band that I thought I knew quite a lot about, but you know so much of the detail. And I want to end with something which, if you can say it in very short terms, because you talk about a chain of circumstances related to People Need Love that, if they had panned out differently, could have spelled the end of ABBA before they even started. What could have happened?
Well, without giving away too much, they almost, if I phrase it this way, they almost didn't get the all-important promotion on Swedish radio that they needed at the time. And if they hadn't if that song People Need Love hadn't been played on the radio in this high profile context, there's a big chance that it would never have become a hit. And if it hadn't become a hit, they might have said, well, okay, so that didn't work. Let's do something else. And they wouldn't have pursued their recording career as a foursome.
Oh, amazing. Carl Magnus Pahn, thank you. If anyone wants to know more about ABBA, there is a deep dive interview which we did just before Christmas, which is absolutely fascinating, and it goes through the whole history, you know, and coincides with the ABBA at 50 book. I just want to say thanks again. I love talking to you because it is really fascinating, all these stories behind ABBA, and I will probably see you again later in the year, I'm sure. Thank you.
I hope so. Thank you, Steve.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.